Craig, as we move into the fall season this year, Reasonable Faith has a lot going on. Busy schedule with you.
Yes.
I think Paramount is a radio opportunity, which is another expansion of Reasonable Faith.
It is a new venture, Kevin, and it's sort of ironic because, as you may recall, when we started Reasonable Faith about 7 years ago, our initial plan was to have a radio program called Reasonable Faith. But then we instead founded the website and had a web-based ministry. But now through my affiliation with Houston Baptist University, there is the possibility of our getting on radio. Dr. Sloan, the president of HBU, has a radio show in Houston. And he's going to give over to Reasonable Faith 2 weeks of his show in October, November, for us to run a pilot program on radio in Houston. And if the response of listeners is good, then HBU is interested in sponsoring a Reasonable Faith radio program on Houston radio. And this could, of course, expand then in Texas to Dallas and San Antonio. So it's a real opportunity for us to do this show.
Followers of Reasonable Faith, I hope, will take note, because this is an opportunity for a syndication to even get more people to the podcast and to the resources that are on reasonablefaith.org. And so it's great to go in with traditional broadcasting to do this.
Right. And it'll be non-exclusive, as you say. HBU will sponsor the program, but this same program could be aired in California or in Seattle or in different venues around the nation. So it's not exclusive use of our material in Houston. It's inclusive of other places. So this past week, I've been in Atlanta at the Atlanta Video Studios recording these broadcasts of these 22-minute programs, and it has really been a job to get it down to just 22 minutes. I tried my best timing them at home by reading them aloud to have it about 22 minutes. But then, as it turned out, actually doing it in studio, they came out to 27, even 29 or 30 minutes. And so now I'm cutting them down and they're coming out to be 20 minutes and 31 seconds or something. So now I've got to add material back in to try to get it to exactly that length. So that's been one of the things that I've been involved in lately, is working on these broadcasts that will then go on the air in Houston in October.
These will be the big guns, too, these initial programs, because you're doing the existence of God and the resurrection of Jesus.
Right.
And so putting all that into 22-minute programs, synopsizing the evidence and the arguments, it's got to be challenging, Bill.
It is, actually, to try to get just the essentials into 22 minutes. But we'll do 4 arguments the first week on the existence of God, the traditional ones that I have defended. And then the next week, we'll do 5 shows on the resurrection of Jesus, taking these principal facts of the empty tomb, the postmortem appearances of Jesus, the origin of the Christian way, one a day, and then a day at the end to look at explanations of these facts. So it fits into a very nice weekly stretch on Jesus' resurrection.
You're teaching a course as well in October at HBU.
Right, and then I'll go to HBU in October to teach a one-week class there, and they've asked me to do one on God and time. So we'll be doing that for both undergrads and some graduate students in the program.
Coming in November to Baylor University, it's a Plantica Palooza. I think they're calling it a Plantica Fest.
Yes.
It's all dealing with Alvin Plantinga and his work that will be at Baylor University.
You've been invited? Trent Dougherty, who's faculty at Baylor in the philosophy department, is putting on a conference based upon Plantinga's very famous lecture, 24 or so arguments for God's existence. And what he has done is assembled a group of philosophers who would each address one of these arguments and unfold it and assess its soundness. And then Plantinga will be there as well to give a response. And so this looks to be a very fun conference at Baylor. And although Plantinga has never addressed explicitly the Kalam cosmological argument, there's a little section of his lecture, 24 argument, called Etc. And so the Kalam argument falls under the et cetera, rather ignominious classification for it. But Trent wanted me to be involved in this conference, so I'll be giving a paper there on the Kalam cosmological argument and its prospects as a piece of natural theology.
Does Alvin Plantinga have a favorite natural theology argument for God? Does he have one that he's most famous for?
I don't think that you would say that there is a favorite argument that he has for the existence of God. He presents a sort of cumulative case. Mm-hmm. Certainly, his argument, his evolutionary argument against naturalism, would be one of the most important arguments he's offered. But it's not an argument for theism. It's a critique of naturalism to say that naturalism is rationally unaffirmable. It's not even to say naturalism is false, just that no one can rationally be a naturalist. If naturalism is true, you cannot affirm it rationally. And so it's an untenable position. That's probably his most famous argument, but it's not really an argument for God's existence.
On Guard continues to make waves, your book, and perhaps a new version.
Yes, I am very pleased about this. David C. Cook is the publisher of On Guard, and they publish, you know, Sunday school materials that go into churches. And we went with Cook because I wanted very much for On Guard to get into churches where it could be used in small groups and Bible studies and Sunday school classes to train Christians in the defense of the faith. And it has been very encouraging to see different groups using it in exactly that way. Well, Cook now wants to put out a student edition of On Guard that would be geared for high school students and college students. So this will be rewritten in the language of the youth culture's vernacular. So it'll probably have a lot of expressions in it, like that fine-tuning is cool or awesome or something like that. And I want to write the book in such a way that it will not be geared toward Christians, as is the original, but will be geared toward the unbeliever who is seeking to find the truth about God and Christianity. So this student edition will have a very different feel than the original version. They want to make it a standalone volume on God's existence and then supplement it with additional chapters covering even more arguments for the existence of God. So that also could be a very nice project.
What's been the reaction to On Guard, as opposed to Reasonable Faith, your other book? On Guard is a little more on the lay level.
And much more.
A lot more accessible, perhaps.
Yes.
Introductory to Christian philosophy and apologetics.
Yes, it's a primer for the beginner, and the response has been very good. I've been really happy with the way it's been adopted for use in different groups, and people are using it to get trained in the defense of the faith. It's been very gratifying.
We get letters, we get emails. People go online and they try to test their knowledge against the opposition. They'll go into atheist and skeptical websites. And often we hear of people just really being beaten up when they go in there. They go in unprepared. And it's also a bad thing to go in an unloving way and just fight, because these can be real brutal, nasty areas. Do you have anything to say about how On Guard could help that, and maybe even the attitude?
Yes, I think that Christians who try to enter into these forums or go Google, does God exist on the internet, and read these materials are just crazy if they do so without having first equipped themselves. They don't seem to understand that they're entering into a spiritual and intellectual battleground, and that their souls may be imperiled as a result of reading this sort of material. So they need to equip themselves first and not read this sort of material unless and until they are thoroughly grounded and equipped in natural theology and Christian evidences. And it's so interesting, Kevin, to see the difference this makes. On the one hand, you hear about these naive and ill-equipped Christians who lose their faith by confronting the most silly and spurious objections to theism or Christian faith. On the other hand, we get emails constantly from people who have first studied these arguments. Then they go read these atheistic materials. And these people are typically shocked, even appalled at the superficiality of these atheistic critiques and how easy they are to answer. And they find out that really this whole new atheism is just an imposture. It's a bluff, really, that preys upon the naive and the uninformed.
Bill, I want to emphasize what you just said, because it's not that the arguments are so persuasive and compelling that you'll find on so many of these internet atheist websites. It's just that there is a spirit, there's such an opposition to the soul that's there that wants to produce doubt,
yeah,
that wants to produce questioning everything, that just breeds this inappropriate skepticism. There's a lot going on there than just the arguments that need to be dealt
yes.
with.
And this is coupled with an air of condescension, where if you are a religious believer, you're looked down upon as some sort of an idiot or mental midget. You're not a true thinker or a true philosopher. And these people are saying this utterly in ignorance of the tremendous intellectual resources of Christianity and the great contemporary scholars who are Christians in various fields.
The EPS is coming up in November.
Right.
Talk about the Evangelical Philosophical Society and why perhaps some of our viewers and listeners may want to be involved.
Well, the Evangelical Philosophical Society is the largest professional society of Christian philosophers in the world. And we have an annual conference every year that moves around the country. And this year it's in San Diego. And so I'll be there presenting a paper and participating in some panel discussions. And the EPS has a very rich conference that is coupled with the Conference of the Evangelical Theological Society, which attracts a few thousand theologians. So it's a really great conference, and I would encourage Christians who are interested in Christian academia to participate in this. One thing we'll be doing new this year is having a special breakfast for all of the Reasonable Faith chapter directors who are in attendance. And so this will be a chance for me and Jan to meet some of our chapter directors that we've never met before, as well as to hear stories about what's happening in different local chapters around the country.
Dr. Craig, as we wrap up today, talk about this opportunity in Washington, D.C. from the Teaching Company.
Well, as you know, Kevin, the Teaching Company markets this curriculum called the Great Courses, where they get some of the best professors at various universities to offer these courses via DVD that then ordinary lay people can purchase and participate in, courses on mathematics and literature and various fields of science and so forth. And lo and behold, I've been contacted by the Teaching Company about the possibility of doing a course in Christian apologetics. Now, this just astonished me that the Teaching Company would be interested in having a class on Christian apologetics. But apparently there is considerable interest in their customer base in having such a course. And so they've invited me to come to Washington on December 4th and 5th and to film a pilot lecture of such a class. And then based upon how that's received and judged, they would offer then a contract for a 30-hour course on Christian apologetics that would be part of the Great Courses curriculum.
Outstanding. This is going to be in December. So what famous sweater are you going to wear?
Yeah,
you have to
make
it out in advance. We can auction that one off, you know, as we've done in the past. That is exciting. And apparently if they're noticing an interest, a marketing interest, which translates to an interest in the deeper things of the Christian faith.
That's very significant in and of itself, isn't it, Kevin?
Yes.
From a marketing standpoint, there is demand out there from customers for training in Christian apologetics. How remarkable. And that the Teaching Company should see this as a marketable opportunity for them. So that in itself, I think, is very interesting. But I would pray that the pilot would go well and that it would be well received.
Bill, so many of the things that we talk about are found on the newsletter, and I just want to encourage anyone who is not signed up for the newsletter to go to reasonablefaith.org and just sign up. You'll get it right there in your inbox, and it details what's going on, some behind-the-scenes things, and also some testimonials that some people don't often see.
Yes, I would really encourage folks, if you're at all interested in Reasonable Faith as a ministry, you've got to be on this mailing list for our monthly newsletter, because there you'll hear about all the exciting things that we've been involved in. One reader wrote in and said, it's like reading the 29th chapter of Acts. And I certainly find writing the letter to be exciting and fun, and I know it'll be an encouragement to folks who read it.
They even get to hear from Jan, who has a section in the newsletter. Pictures, the whole thing. So sign up for that at reasonablefaith.org. And Dr. Craig, if all else fails, you can go into professional wrestling because you're being known as the WLC nationwide, the new terminology. Don't know if you're aware of that.